Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome to Interchange. I'm the host, Allison Bechtesh, here for WFHB today. Last Tuesday, November 29th, five protesters were arrested at the IU Kelley School of Business as they conducted a sit-in blocking a J.P. Morgan Chase career fair. Four of them are here tonight. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hi.
I'd like you to quickly identify yourself. Let's just go around the room. If you could state your name, say what you're studying here at IU, if you're not a student, what you're profession is. Just introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jordan Pointer. I'm a student at IU. I study English literature.
My name's Nick Graven. I'm studying history, cognitive science, and animal behavior.
Hi, I'm Peter Oren. I'm an IU student studying English as well.
My name is Cheyenne Cullum, and I am not a student at IU, but I work at a video store called Plan 9 and a jewelry shop called Moonstones.
Excellent. Well, again, I want to thank you all for being here this evening. And of course, I want to get to the action that you took last week. I want to build up to that a little and get an understanding of exactly what it was you were standing up against. And I'd like to start by focusing on the bigger picture here. You released a statement of intent along with this action regarding J.P. Morgan Chase specifically. And Nick, we have a quote from you about that we'll play in just a minute, but can you expand more on that and just explain why J.P. Morgan Chase?
J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the big six investment banks that was, that received the bailout in 2008 after the financial collapse that they caused, and then they profited off the bailout and lobbied against regulations for the banking industry.
Okay, I want to read a line from your statement, quote, "The reality of the current U.S. economic and political system is that entities like J.P. Morgan Chase and a small contingent of other financial giants, in collusion with the fossil fuel industry, major agribusiness interests, and pharmaceutical companies, effectively control our government." Can any of you discuss further the ties between something like the banking industry and environment and drug companies? How far is the reach of these organizations?
My name is Peter Oren. This is Peter speaking. I think that two of the major ways in which these large corporations affect our government is through lobbying and through campaign finance. These companies spend millions of dollars a year to persuade our representatives to do what they want, and typically that is what is most profitable to them, regardless of the environmental or social impact that those decisions might have. So J.P. Morgan, I know, spends millions of dollars a year on those pursuits, the lobbying and campaign finance, and so that influence in our government is seriously detrimental to a lot of progress, especially in addressing the concerns of climate change, the reality of climate change, not simply the concerns, but and actually moving away from our destructive practices and utilizing energy.
If you look at, in regards to the connections, for example, J.P. Morgan Chase finances mountaintop removal mining. So they are connected in that way. And also, in terms of connections, the fossil fuel industry itself lobbies the government and has enormous subsidies. So they're connected in that way as well.
J.P. Morgan is actually one of one of the only banks that, at this point, the biggest banks that are still supporting mountaintop removal. Many of the other ones have withdrawn or stopped financing. So it's very maybe discouraging that this huge bank that has so much power is still funding that and supporting that when it's horrible. It's really affecting a lot of people in ways that are unstoppable. And and maybe you guys can help me out here. Whoever the man is who is sort of funding the biggest coal, mountaintop removal coal.
Massey.
But the chief executive of that denies that global warming is even an issue. He doesn't believe in it, which he is causing it the most. So that's very scary.
Yeah, to play off that, I've read that they have changed their policy specifically with regard to Massey Energy. And I do believe that they're not financing them anymore, but
you mean
I could
Chase?
Be wrong. Yes, that's right, JP Morgan Chase.
And so when you do say that a bank finances mining, you're saying that they are giving money to someone who needs more money in order to carry out the procedure. You're not saying that Chase workers are out there blowing off the mountaintops.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's what banks do.
And obviously they've taken notice enough that to write up some policy like that is what you're saying.
Yeah, the extent to which their policies have actually affected their lending practices is unclear to me, and I'm not sure whether or not that policy extends beyond Massey Energy. My research has been limited, and what I've found online has been limited.
Well, I'm really interested, actually, in how all of you are getting your research. What organizations are you looking to see the full picture of Chase and other organizations? Something you mentioned in your statement of intent is that these organizations are now considered the same as a person. That's a new law that was passed through a Supreme Court decision this year. So these corporations that are now people, how are you finding out what actions they are taking?
How are we finding out what actions they're taking?
Where do you go to research these banks and what they're doing?
I think it's pretty easy to find in, like, the New York Times, Bloomberg, pretty much any major news source. The Huffington Post has a lot of exposés on stuff like this. Just news. The American Interest magazine had a whole issue last month about basically how our government is a plutocracy and how that's come to be. So that's one.
Yeah, I think it's important when you're looking into the source of this information to understand that, of course, there's always sort of a partisan tinge to everything. And one of the great things about the occupation movement, especially in wake of the huge bailout of the banks, is that at least for, though they may not be nonpartisan, for most journalists, there is an increasing interest to report on issues of corporate, malfeasance in whatever form that takes, specifically because it's so in tune with what people, have been paying attention to and what people are interested in reading about, in the wake of both the occupation movement and the bailouts.
And also, it's also become not even a partisan issue. It's like the Tea Party was pissed about government and corporate collusion, and Occupy's doing the same thing in taking different tacks, obviously.
I was just trying to point out that we're not a bunch of Democrats reading MoveOn.org and pretending that that's our fully informed views.
Right. But what I was going to say is it's the issue of income disparity, which is what this comes down to, or wealth disparity, is not partisan. Like the Congress, on average, the average wealth or income of a congressman is like $2.63 million a year, which is completely absurd.
And then moving up to this event, which you planned, I mean, you have this information that you feel it's not equal between the wealthiest and the poorest, and that banks, especially these big corporate banks, are not doing anything to help that. In fact, they're purposely trying to hurt it. So how did you then put together the action that you took last week? How did you find out that they were coming to campus? Who did you get involved, and how did you spread the word that you were going to be there doing this?
I believe someone brought the event initially to Nick's attention. Do you remember how that happened, Nick? I was not the first one to hear about it.
It was actually J.P. Morgan had made an event on Facebook, and it was like on the sidebar of my Facebook page for some reason. And I was like, well, that was a mistake. So, and then we talked to a lot of people. I mean, we have a lot of friends who are interested in this kind of stuff because we've been working on, I don't know if you've heard about the Keystone XL no tar sands issue. We've been really involved in that. And it really comes down to the same thing. Like, if we had a democracy, we wouldn't be doing something like that. But we don't.
Right. And while we stated that what we did was an autonomous action and not directly associated with Occupy Bloomington or Occupy IU, certainly those networks did allow for greater organization and finding interested parties.
I'm not sure that we would have... Well, I don't think that I personally would have felt as supported as I did without the Occupy people coming and standing by us. I'm certainly happy that we had a much bigger group as we did.
So you see this sidebar, and it's an organization that you were against, and they're coming right home in our backyard at IU's campus. But what does it take to lead to, I'm going to take my evening off and go do something about this? I mean, what was the frame of mind that got to, I'm against this, to, I'm going to do something against this?
I'm pretty strongly in favor of democracy. I don't see any way that we can solve the problems that our generation faces in climate change, immigration, peak oil, any of these things. I see the current power structure as benefiting from and perpetuating the risks of those issues. And I think that's a bad thing. So it's just a question of what you're willing to do.
Yeah, I think that what made me most inspired to go and do this is sort of seeing this, in my eyes, an evil company just get bigger and bigger and not almost suffer a fall, but then at the last minute are sort of saved. And that was, to see that happen a few years ago, that was scary. But then to actually... see it affecting people that I know personally, that's much more inspiring to try and stop that. And I think that I feel like I'm at the perfect age to do something like this, because maybe I don't have a family, I don't have people that I need to take care of or that rely on me. So I thought, why not?
What do you mean that you've seen this bank affect people that you know?
Well, just foreclosing on homes and just families using Chase as just an accounting process, which I see doesn't work. It's corporate banking shouldn't be allowed any longer, I don't think. That's it.
Right. And for me, a lot of this was addressing the impact that JP Morgan Chase has on our school, our university and the Kelly School of Business. They have an enormous amount of sway within the Kelly School of Business, and because our public educative institutions have gotten to the point where they need to be competitive, that requires that they put up good numbers for job placement for students once they graduate. So for them to actively pursue companies like JP Morgan Chase to bring them to our campus, despite their their history and their impact on our lives presently. I think that that needed to be reconsidered by our school, and I think that we've brought that to the school's attention. And I think that that's one of the most valuable things that we've done, because, you know, our public institutions should be free of corporate interests, especially ones that are as malignant as the ones we're discussing now.
Jordan, did you want to add anything to what led to your decision to be part of this?
Sure. I think that it largely comes down to something similar to what Cheyenne said, in that you have an opportunity for one reason or another, whether it's because I'm a part of the institution that's affected or because I'm young and I don't have some of the same responsibilities that Cheyenne mentioned. But regardless, if you're willing to, you know, look around you at the world and recognize that there, I mean, these issues, the huge disparity of wealth or, you know, whatever issue it is, it makes sense that if you're capable and willing and able to take the risk and involve yourself in rectifying those situations, that you should. And so, I mean, coming from that position, it just made sense that when I heard about the opportunity to get involved in this action, that I was in.
Right. I second that, and I'd like to add that that a lot of the, like, we discussed tactics quite thoroughly for this, and we've received a lot of criticism for having prevented the students from pursuing these careers and job placement in this through this recruitment session. But really what we were trying to do was to allow a raised level of awareness for these kinds of issues that could really only be achieved by drastic measures. And so it was kind of, our arrests, I think, were kind of a sacrifice for the sake of public dialogue that could be fruitful. And I think that the repercussions of our arrests have certainly achieved that.
All right, well, after a quick break, I'm definitely going to ask you more about those measures that were taken. Right before the break, Nick, I want to play a quote from you that from our reporter Joe Crawford asked you right after this event last Wednesday, an interview with you, when you kind of summed up some of your feelings towards JPMorgan Chase. If we could play that and then have you expand on that and your response to that. Here's the clip.
The major financial institutions like JPMorgan Chase have effectively compromised democracy in this country, and by all rights should not exist anymore. They should have failed in 2008, and banks that had, like, legitimate practices should have continued, should have taken their places or prospered. And what we have now is a system that allows companies to become enormous by fraudulent and greedy practices and interest purely in their own bottom line and short-term profits that are unsustainable and destructive to everyone who's not them. And then they get to a point where they have so much influence over the government that they effectively write their own regulations and put officials in office.
Yeah, so the way I see it, there's a perception that we have a capitalist economy in this country, and that's just inaccurate, because in a capitalist economy, these companies would have failed. And the fact that they, and I know there's all this discussion of if we'd allowed them to fail, then we would have gone into a recession and all of that, and that's true. But in my opinion, it's worse to allow companies like this to continue to exist and to continue to gain power, because they do effectively run the government. They decide what the government does. Like, the Treasury Secretary is the former Goldman Sachs CEO. They act in favor of, like, they work together. So I think that there are definitely plenty of ways to deal with the depression other than just propping up an unfair status quo. And these people weren't just, like, they didn't just make mistakes. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse, but they did really terrible things to people intentionally, like knowing what they were doing. And there was an article in the New York Times just the other day, a banker, I'm not sure if he was from Chase, but he was from one of these big six companies, that came out saying that he was encouraged by his superiors to do really unethical things in order to make more short-term profits, including like racially motivated predatory lending. So, I mean, I think that's inexcusable.
All right. Well, that added enough fuel to lead to action that did take place on IU's campus last week. We've been speaking with four local citizens who were arrested during a protest at the Kelly School last week. We're going to take a quick break, and we will get back to discuss the protest itself and the arrest that night.
Support for WFHB comes from Darn Good Soup on the west side of the Courthouse Square. Darn Good Soup is open from 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., serving 10 to 12 soups daily, plus salads and baked goods. Vegetarian and vegan options abound. Darn Good Soup, it's fast, it's healthy, it's darn good. Online at darngoodsoup.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to Interchange on WFHB Community Radio. I am your host this evening, Allison Bektesh. We've been speaking with a group of protesters about the impact of big banks and the rest of our democracy. Now, in your statement of intent, which WFHB received after the four of you were arrested last week, you addressed the reason for holding the action, protesting the J.P. Morgan job call-out on campus. While you say that these issues are so big that it's easy for one person to feel powerless, you did state, quote, we must first organize within our communities to disrupt the workings of these malignant entities. So tell me, what difference did you make in this community last week?
I think we raised a lot of awareness. Whether or not you agree or disagree or think what we did was irrational, it really doesn't matter because you, in one way or another, have thought about it. And that's sort of, in my opinion, that's the most important thing, because you can't start anywhere before you think about it. And raising awareness is something that is so important for obvious reasons. and when you stay complacent or you just don't care, that is something that will eventually come back to haunt you, because you'll be overrun by the government or by big banks. And I think that's what we're trying to stop.
Now, Peter, you said that you did have quite a few discussions leading up to the logistics of carrying this out. Can you tell me what those discussions were, and were you able to match that to your plan?
Yeah, sure. We discussed whether or not we would like to engage the business students that were there for the meeting to discuss these things instead of allowing them to be at the meeting. We discussed all sorts of tactics, including a mic check, which has been utilized by various groups, typically Occupy groups. And we decided that we would like to bring this. We decided that we would like to bring our issues to the greater public rather than engage just a small population within this community. And so one of the beneficial aspects of I think our action was that in addition to increasing community dialogue, we've increased involvement as well, I think. To some extent, I've spoken with a number of people who said that they would be interested in, you know, engaging more more actively in addressing these issues, which is a great thing. And so we had those kind of goals in mind in planning this.
So for listeners who weren't in the halls of the Kelley Business School exactly 1 week ago, Tuesday night, what happened?
The Facebook event told us when the event was going to be taking place and had a room on it. So we had intended to we had lookouts watching that room, and it actually turned out that the event wasn't in that room, so it came to a point and we realized that it wasn't happening in that room, so we sent other people in and they looked around and found where the event was happening. And we had a strategy all planned out that we were going to sit in front of the two doors, and we had who was willing to go how far decided. And there was also a group coming over from the library who would like the press. And so we found where the event was actually happening. And at first we were a little confused because it looked like maybe the students were already in the room. And we had decided that we didn't want to do a mic check or something like that because the language of finance would be ridiculous to try to mic check.
And can you just clarify that? Is that the process of someone saying something and then it kind of echoes verbally throughout the crowd?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. So we decided we didn't want to do that. So we kind of scouted out the situation, and then we decided to go ahead with our original plan and just walk through. They had a table set up with, checking to student IDs and stuff, and we just went past them and sat down where we in front of the doors, and there's a detective there who started pushing people, and then they called the cops, and then the rest of the group arrived from the library, and it went from there. There were probably 10, 15 cops.
How many people were there in order to stop the job call from happening?
Close to 35, maybe, I'd say. Close to 35.
And there was a detective there already before you had sat down?
Yeah, because we put up, we assumed because we put up signs all over campus the day before with a list of the terrible things that JPMorgan Chase does, and saying, if this pisses you off, come to the library at this time. And I guess they didn't want people who were pissed off to come there.
Okay, so for radio, let's see if we can visualize this. What were you and your supporters doing? What were students interested in attending the fair doing? And then what were the law enforcement officials doing during this time?
For the most part, the interested parties from the action side were either engaged in the sit-in or were... We had a media liaison, Justinian, who was reading statements, and then there were others taking photos. For as far as the business students went, most of them were pretty complacent. They were just standing in the hall. Most of them were just waiting around either to see what the resolution was. I think a lot of them went home at some point. That was my understanding. Law enforcement, once they arrived, formed a line around those sitting in and separating us from most of the onlookers, including business students. Yeah.
So are you saying that this action was in some sense successful? The idea was to keep these students from getting to the recruiters, and if they went home, they didn't see the recruiters?
They didn't see the recruiters.
No students did.
I think that maybe there were a couple of people inside the room that were probably discussing us when it comes down to it, because as the people sitting, we were silent, but at one point or another, I think when Nick started getting taken away, the crowd went wild. they started getting really loud, and in that setting, it's probably impossible to conduct an interview. And they actually, benefiting us, they locked themselves inside. So even if someone had tried to get inside, they were unable to because they just locked themselves in.
I mean, it was definitely successful. We had intended, as a group, we had three goals, which were to disrupt the event as it was intended to happen by the people who planned it, and to raise awareness of JPMorgan Chase's crimes, and to express our disgust with the university's interaction with them. And we did those three things.
Yeah, and in addition, last night I received a wonderful bit of hate mail on Facebook. It at least sounded like hate mail, but there may be someone venting, I'm not sure, but he said that he had heard that JPMorgan Chase has said that they will not come to IU's campus again to recruit. So I see that as a positive thing.
Yeah. Did you have something to say? Also, the next day, we weren't aware, but Goldman Sachs, which is even worse than JPMorgan Chase, they're like the...
Well, you know, assigning, you know, value. Yeah.
I mean, if we were to assign value, I would put Goldman Sachs at the top, personally. They came to campus the next day, which we weren't aware of, and they went through this absurd, like, security shenanigans where they were like brought into the Kelly School and then taken out the back and then put on a bus and brought up to the stadium and put on a different bus and then taken to like one of several locations that had Goldman Sachs signs up. So if nothing else, it made the banks look like idiots.
Nick, you mentioned you got feedback on Facebook. Did you also mention that one of you received feedback from a business student, or there was a written response from the business students?
Yeah, there. A business student wrote a response to our statement of intent, saying that he agrees that the system is severely messed up, but that the only way to fix it is to learn the skills of investment bankers and to become an investment banker and to fix it internally, and I think he's very naive. Investment banks are solely interested in short-term profits. So if you come in intending to be an ethical investment banker and there is a chance to make a decision that increases short-term profits but perhaps contributes to global warming, and you choose to not contribute to global warming, then there's going to be another recent graduate from some other business school who is totally down.
I mean, I think it might be important to mention here, too, that there's been some contention over our use of the term short-term profits. Obviously, we're not totally naive as far as business theory and economics goes, so I understand the importance of long-term growth in any economic endeavor, but the way we intended that use, and maybe Nick will correct me on this, but I believe was to communicate more so the notion that profit is the utmost concern of investment banking and companies and huge corporations and banks like JP Morgan, and that those profits come often at the expense of more important and often long-term, more valuable results, whether that's whether that's environmental rectification or health in general.
Right, and for my part, I see that the allocation of massive amounts of funding based on whether or not it's profitable for the company that is distributing the funds as not at all a service to society at large, because they will do things like, lend money to people in the Sudan and break all sorts of U.S. Laws, international laws. They've been linked to lending money to shipping in Iran, which breaks, U.S. embargo. They've also lent money to places in Cuba. So the method of distributing funds through this is completely perverted in my mind.
And also, like, there was a time about 30 years ago, around the time Reagan came into office, that there were banks that were ethical, and they, like, didn't just want short-term profits. Short-term profits to me means, like, I think the profits of a year, the profits that the shareholders get, or maybe it's a quarter or whatever the time period where shareholders receive money from the shares that they have in a company. And there was a time when banks or investment banks were interested in the stability of their community and long-term growth and stability, as well as some short-term profit. That's changed. Like, now CEOs set the panel that decides on their salaries. So they get enormous salaries no matter what they do, or enormous bonuses no matter what they do. And additionally, in 1999, the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated investment banks from commercial banks, which are the banks that you put your money in, just your savings, was done away with. So now people's savings, like what their entire life savings, is available for these banks to gamble to increase their shareholders' profits for one quarter or 1 year, or whatever that period of time is.
Getting back to on Tuesday, I mean, we hear these facts and we say that word CEO, and we imagine a stereotypical image. And I think when you say an Occupy, someone who's been camping out in a public park, you have a stereotypical image. However, in the Keller School of Business, it was IU students looking at IU students. Was there any dialogue between business students and English majors, between the students who were there to work for these banks and the students who were there to keep them from that? And was there any kind of recognition that we all pretty much look the same and we're all going to the same school in the same town, that kind of unity?
Well, I think visually, I think that business students and English majors typically have different garb. I think that especially for recruitment events like JP Morgan Chase, I saw that most of the business students were very well dressed, wearing nice peak coats or whatever they're called. Not something
business
that I would
suits, I think
suit
is what they're called.
Jackets,
right? Suit jackets. Well, suit, well, no, I, like a winter overcoat for their to look nice with their business suit.
It was snowing,
and so I mean, there are visual differences, and I think that those reflect the values inherent in, the two opposing ideologies.
Know if I agree with that at
okay,
all.
Okay. I'm sorry. Perhaps my phrasing.
What did you have any moments where you were able to look at some other guy and be like, he's pretty much like me, or did you and get involved in dialogue with anyone who was there for the event?
I don't think there was very much dialogue, and who weren't engaged in the sit-in might contradict me, whatever, they may have had dialogue because they were, not sitting, but for the most part, those who were engaged in the sit-in were removed to some extent, both by space and by their position from those other students, so I don't know how much of a dialogue there was at the event.
You said you were, you talked about beforehand with everyone who was there for this action, how far they were willing to go. So was there a part of you that was expecting an arrest?
Well, yeah. I think that we assumed that the worst, or, in quotes, the worst thing that could happen would be to be arrested. And I still felt that it was worth it. As far as the other few groups, there was talked about that there was probably very little chance that they would actually also be taken away if they were not doing the actual sitting, blocking the doors. And we definitely recognized that being arrested would be an option. We spoke with a legal advisor about an hour before the event, for about an hour, and that was very helpful to give me confidence that what would the possibilities be for my arrest as far as the charges. And of course there was no knowing, there was no this is exactly what will happen, but it was good to hear some words of encouragement that what you're doing is not the worst thing that you could be doing, and I think that the court will recognize that.
Also, I'd just like to add, as far as dialogue between student, between at the time there was not much dialogue, but in regard to differences between Kelly students and other students at IU, I think obviously we all know that we're living in the same town and from Indiana and all that, but there's a fundamental difference in that at Kelly School they don't teach anything except for neoliberal corporate capitalism. And those of us who are in like history or labor studies or philosophy or English, I mean, we all recognize that there are other possibilities for the ways to do things, and they don't.
I'm Allison Bektesh for Interchange. I'm speaking with Peter Oren, Nick Graven, Jordan Pointer, and Cheyenne Cullum, members of the community who were arrested last week after a protest blocking a recruitment event by J.P. Morgan Chase. Coming up, I'll be asking this crew about the conditions of the county jail that they spent some time in, some other ramifications of their arrest, and what's in store in the future, right after this.
Support for WFHB comes from Bloom Magazine, a proud underwriter of community radio. In the December-January issue of Bloom, you can read about the lives of seven Bloomington artists and the journey of Gare Dwayne from the killing fields of North Africa to Bloomington, New York, and Hollywood. More information is available at magbloom.com.
Listening to Interchange on WFHB. Five protesters were arrested last week and booked in Monroe County Jail after staging a protest outside a J.P. Morgan Chase recruitment event. We don't get hoodlums quite enough on this show, so I do want to take this time to ask you about some of the conditions of your arrest. I want to know about being brought away from Kelly. I mean, I imagine you sitting down and being dragged up, but I want to hear about it, and that from that time on to the conditions of the jail.
I think Nick was taken away first, and then I was picked up, but I wore a dress, and as they flipped me over into the fifth protester, who's not here, into her crotch, and my skirt was very high up, and my underwear was showing, and it wasn't the best Well, maybe it was in my favor that that happened to give some sympathy to me, but it was...
How many people were picking you up?
I think there were two on each side because they'd asked me to stand and I refused. And so they lifted me up and I lifted my legs up and they had to take me out all the way. It was then that the woman asked me to stand because I was hurting her back. And I was brought outside without a coat, very cold. And Nick gave me a look that said, "You should stand up because you're soaking in the ground now." They had put me down in the snow. And so then I stood up and I was placed in the police car. It wasn't more than 2 minutes before my friend Thea followed and was placed next to me. And from there, we stood there for a few minutes. I asked her if what was happening to that man. I didn't realize he was a detective at the time. The man who had assaulted our students and our friends, and she said she had no idea what was going on. So she went back inside to figure that out. And when she came back, she drove off. So.
Yeah, I was arrested first, and you know, there's different levels of resistance to arrest, and we had decided that we would try not to go easily, but like not fight back, because that would be obviously heavier charges. So I went limp and made them like pick me up and force my arms behind my back, and then once they dragged me away from the door, I didn't see any reason to keep resisting, so I just walked out with them.
Yeah, it was similar for me. Jordan and I we snuck in behind the line of policemen after the first three were arrested, and we linked arms at the elbows and held. I braced my hands with my wrists. I had a grasp, and after they had decided to arrest us, they tried to break apart our arms, and we held tight, and it took a pretty serious struggle before they got our arms apart. And then I'd kind of curled up into a ball and wouldn't give them my arms. And eventually they used pressure points, or at least one pressure point on my neck, and twisted my elbow, like, or not my elbow, but my ankle at my butt, and it was painful. I hadn't thought of that. And eventually I relinquished, and I let them have my arms, and then I walked out with them at that point.
Now, five of you were arrested. Is that because only five of you intended, you know, to stay until arrest, or once this started, did people who say at first they would stay to arrest get up and move away?
Well, two more, in fact, were willing to be arrested, and they tried to be arrested. If you see the video online, when Jordan and I were being arrested, a friend of ours was trying to get through the police line in order to sit down so that she could take her turn, and there was at least one more who would have done so, but the police didn't let them through the line. We were just sneaky first, and they expected it after we went.
And were you all transferred to a holding room in the jail together?
I think we had three separate police cars. I was with Thea, Peter, and Jordan were together, and Nick had a car all to himself.
I had a car to myself as well.
You had a car to yourself. So Jordan had a car to himself.
Yes.
They put the ladies together.
Huh. And when you arrived?
We were processed relatively slowly. It wasn't too bad.
I don't think it was relatively slowly. It took about 4 hours.
Yeah. Well, I meant like the initial processing, the initial stuff where they took our possessions and asked us a bunch of strange questions about our sexuality and our psychological state.
And is this how they figure out where to place you then in holding?
I believe so. And they placed us in the two drunk tanks, I believe, one for females and one for men.
Were you accompanied by other people who had been arrested that night, or?
In the drunk tank, or the detox room, cell, there were three other individuals who were at various levels of inebriation.
They weren't. They weren't arrested with us, though.
No.
Right. No.
Right. Okay. Yeah, they were.
I don't think they were
I'm interested in what.
Well, that's not.
Well,
important.
One of them wasn't drunk to begin with.
Besides the point. Yeah.
There was one woman in the female detoxification room. What are we calling it?
That sounds about
detox
right.
room.
How do you assess the conditions of the Monroe County Jail?
I spoke with one of the officers, and I spoke specifically about the food. I wondered what the food was like, and he said, "It's honestly not as bad as you'd think. It's a little less quality than your elementary school." And I said, "Oh, so small portions?" He said, "Yeah, very small portions." I said, "Maybe that's good to keep people, because they don't exercise as much." But he said that because that's why they give smaller portions, is because people won't exercise, and that causes a lot of inmates to be much more obese than they would be outside in the just walking around in the world.
All right. Well, the next morning, local prosecutor Chris Gall did release a statement to the media that no charges would be filed from his office because of the peaceful nature of your protest and because of scarce resources within the county to deal with that prosecution. Was this the result that you were expecting?
Yeah, that's certainly good news.
We didn't really have any expectation. We didn't have any specific expectation. We didn't expect the charges to be dropped, though. Like, we had a lot of people who were planning to come to the jail and support us. I was expecting some kind of fine or community service, but right on.
And I know that, so that's on the legal side, but there was a note in the prosecutor's statement that that IU has their own way of going about disciplinary actions. Did you receive any warnings from IU?
The three of us, since we're students, we have hearings when we get back from break regarding, we've been charged with disorderly conduct and misuse of university facilities. And
I think it wasn't the misuse, but it was that we didn't allow the use of the facilities.
And failure to obey an order by a university official. So we have plans for that.
Well, I certainly am interested in what is coming up in the future for you. I want to focus a little bit more on the bigger picture again. You said that you heard through the grapevine that this did get back to someone high enough up, at least in the J.P. Morgan Chase recruiting office, that they decided not to attend IU again. I mean, of course, the recruiters on campus must know that this happened. Do you know what the chain of communication was, or how high up it did reach within the Chase organization?
The information that I received about that was from a disgruntled student whose credibility I cannot verify. So I have no idea about the process within the Kelley School of Business or J.P. Morgan Chase, for that matter. So I can't even confirm that is a fact.
Yeah, I've heard everything from the went ahead and had the event in a different room to J.P. Morgan Chase and never coming here again. So I guess we'll see.
And looking forward for you and those of you who did take a stand last week, this event wasn't organized by Occupy Bloomington or Occupy IU. There's certainly a crossover in its participants, including some of you, I think. And it's interesting to me because the Occupy movement has a name and is quite well organized, but it's not known for having specific demands or specific action, whereas you took direct action, but it's my understanding that this organization that organized that doesn't have a name. Are you interested in forming a group and continuing action?
Well, first of all, the Occupy movement is a label that's been given to the occupations that are occurring across the country by the media. There is no cohesion to it except for, like, different groups have contacted us asking us to come tell them about what we did, but it's just starting out. There's
so you yourself are involved in the Occupy Bloomington movement?
Yes, I've been involved in it, but so the perception that Occupy is a movement is kind of misleading. It's really just people expressing their discontent. An occupation is a tactic to draw attention to the concerns that we have about income inequality and wealth inequality in the country and what that's doing to the democratic process. So I would say...
Are you coming together to form an organization? Is this a group that you see taking action again in the future?
Well, I think all of us were present at a protest in Washington, D.C. against the Keystone XL. We took two charter buses down to D.C. On, I think, November 6th. So there are a lot of interested people in Bloomington to be involved in these sort of things. Whether or not that means being arrested, there are varying levels of interest, I think. But myself and a group of individuals who are interested in these sort of things have been discussing whether or not we want to form some more permanent group that will be involved in actions in the future and in pressuring our politicians to address energy issues. The group may take the form of a Hoosier Energy Action League, HEAL. That nothing's set in stone yet, but a group of people met at our house last night for a conference call with leaders and people involved in the Tar Sands Action, which is affiliated with 350.org, which is, working against climate change and the things that cause it. I think that there are opportunities through that to continue this sort of action and continue to use momentum from this action for good things in the future.
I just wanted to finish my thought earlier. What I think the occupation is a... The occupations are a statement of resistance to the current political and economic situation. And a movement may come out of it, but at this point, that's all it is. And people should be aware that that is all it is. Like the original Occupy Wall Street statement, like the invitation, just said bring a tent. There's nothing assumed. So if you have a problem with the political and economic situation, and you've come to the conclusion, as we have, that it won't be solved internally, then you should get involved.
Well, that leads right into this last question I have, just an opportunity for you to perhaps offer anyone listening who does have an interest in taking actions, perhaps not being arrested, but to inform themselves on issues and to take action. Is there stuff that can be done in our community right now that will help this lead to the kind of democracy that you're envisioning?
I have a couple suggestions for people. The first is move your money from big investment banks to credit unions, local credit unions. And secondly, there's a couple different organizations that are working on putting together a constitutional amendment that would remove private money from the political process entirely. And I think that is something that is worth working for. It would be very hard to get done, but I think that if enough people were behind it and the political leadership that we have weren't willing to do it, then that would just show even more how corrupt the system is.
Well, we're right out of time, but I want to thank Peter Oren, Nick Graven, Jordan Pointer, and Cheyenne Cullum very much for coming in and joining me in this conversation tonight.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Thanks also to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Original theme music by Jameel Effem. Interchange is a production of WFHB's News and Public Affairs Department. To contact us with comments and feedback, or if you are interested in joining the Interchange crew, please send an email to interchange@wfhb.org. For WFHB, I'm Allison Bechtesh. Stay tuned for Stardust with Tillman coming up next on WFHB.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.